welcome.
Front formalities, and then if Commissioner Fish gets here in time, he can indicate on his disclosure. So let's call the council to order. Could you call the roll, please?
Saltzman, Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish. Hales.
Here. Okay, we have, why don't you read both items, I think?
Item 922, consider the proposal of Don Goldberg of the Trust for Public Lands and the recommendation from the hearings officer for approval to change the comprehensive plan map designation from open space to industrial sanctuary and the zoning map designation from OS open space to IG1, General Industrial 1, for the northern parcel and a zoning map amendment to modify environmental protection and environmental conservation overlay zones on the site known as the Colwood National Golf Course in the vicinity of Northeast Alderwood Road and Northeast Cornfoot Road, LU12-213-885, CPZCEN. Item 923, amend the comprehensive plan map designation and change zoning of property in the vicinity of Northeast Alderwood Road and Northeast Cornfoot Road and the northern portion of the site known as the Colwood National Golf Course property at the request of Don Goldberg of the Trust for Public Lands, LU12-213-885, CPZCEN.
Okay. This is a quasi-judicial land use hearing that's governed by particular provisions of state law, and there's some things we need to go through about that up front. One is to ask, and maybe I'll delay asking the council members about conflicts of interest and ex parte contacts until Commissioner Fish arrives, but turn it over to the city attorney for the remainder of that process.
This is an evidentiary hearing. This means you may submit new evidence to council in support of your arguments. Testimony concerning the hearings officer's recommendation will be heard as follows. We'll begin with a staff report by BDS staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The applicant will go first and will have 15 minutes to address the council. After the applicant, the council will hear from individuals or organizations who support the applicant's proposal. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak. Next, council will hear from persons or organizations who oppose the applicant's proposal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. If there was testimony in opposition to the applicant's proposal, the applicant will have 5 additional minutes to rebut testimony given in opposition to the proposal. At that point, council may then close the hearing. As this is a non-emergency ordinance, it will pass to a second reading. I'd like to announce several guidelines for those who will be addressing council today. First, submitting evidence into the record. Any letters or documents you wish to become part of the record should be given to the council clerk after you testify. Similarly, the original or a copy of any slides, photographs, drawings, maps, videos, or other items you show to council during your testimony, including PowerPoint presentations, should be given to the council clerk so they become part of the record. Second, testimony must be directed to the approval criteria. Any testimony, arguments, and evidence you present must be directed toward the approval criteria for this review or other criteria in the comprehensive plan or zoning code you believe apply to the decision. BDS staff will identify applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report. Third, issues must be raised with specificity. You have to raise an issue clearly enough to give council and the other parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you don't, you will be precluded from appealing it to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. And finally, the applicant must identify constitutional challenges to conditions of approval. If the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court.
Okay, thank you. So do any council members have conflicts of interest or ex parte contacts or site visits to disclose? Mr. Fritz?
I don't have any conflicts of interest. It would probably be quicker to say who I have not met with, who might be involved in this project than those that I have. A short list is Don Goldberg of the Trust for Public Lands, Leaders of Verde, Councillor, Metro Councillor Sam Chase, Cali Association of Neighborhood Leaders, and Parks Leaders, for all of these folks, I have said as soon as anything remotely connected with this case was mentioned, I cannot talk about that. You cannot talk to me about that. Let's talk about something else. So I can state for the record that I have heard nothing that is going to influence or bias my decision. And in fact, it's very important to me that we make this as a land use decision based on the approval criteria in the code and not on anything else that anybody might have wanted to tell me. I even told my park staff that they needed to wait and give me the briefing about what might happen later.
Okay, good. Thank you. Commissioner Novick?
And I am too lazy to have made a site visit and apparently too unimportant to have been lobbied.
I think neither is true. In my case, I made a brief site visit myself with no staff and no contact with any of the parties last weekend just to refamiliarize myself with the site. I've heard a lot about the site over the years. Also momentarily met Mr. Goldberg on the street here briefly before the hearing, but we didn't discuss the substance of the case. So those are my only disclosures, and we'll see when Commissioner Fish joins us if he has any, but we can go ahead and proceed with the rest of the process at this point. Commissioner Fritz?
Thank you, and if I might invite the Bureau of Development Services staff up for their examination of the case. I want to state at the outset that this has been a much more collaborative process than, and I think has reached much more consensus than previous suggestions on what to do on this site. I very much appreciate all the effort that's gone into this by stakeholders, the applicant, and staff. We are here to address whether or not the approval criteria as stated and addressed by the hearings officer can be met to allow a comprehensive plan map amendment. It's not about who owns it now or who will own it after. It's not about how it will be developed. It's about how the property can be used now, what it will become should a comprehensive plan map amendment be approved. This is a significant request in that we are indicating the open space and environmental zoning to be removed permanently from a portion of this site forever, changing its use to industrial. Changes like this cannot be done lightly. The conditions, and we're going to have some amendments to the conditions, also now reflect a more robust effort to make sure that that happens. And the staff has outlined the environmental concerns and issues with regards to mitigation for the loss of habitat in the environmental zone. It's important to note that this is in the airport futures area, so some of the customary regulations that those of us who do a lot of land use in environmental zones might be used to don't apply in this case. Also, new to me this time was some new interpretations of the state transportation planning rule, which mean a different way of looking at off-site mitigation than we've been used to in the past. So I, for those like me who are planning wonks, that's something to look out for and to listen to staff. And so with that, I'll invite Sheila Fregoli to start us off.
Good afternoon. I'm Sheila Fregoli. My colleague Rachel Whiteside and I are here to present Hearings Officer Gregory Frank's recommendation for comprehensive plan map amendment, zoning map amendment, and environmental review for the property known as the Colwood National Golf Course. Before I speak to the details of the proposal, I need to call attention to the letter you received from Mr. Frank. He has requested minor revisions to his recommendation. Specifically, he asks that the adopting ordinance be amended with changes to condition B and C. The changes were requested by staff, but Mr. Frank inadvertently missed incorporating them into his report. The revised condition language is intended to clarify how permits will be issued for the proposed improvements. Also, you received a letter of opposition from Scott Somahano, the chair of the Sumner Neighborhood Association. Our presentation will address the proposed transportation improvements. Bob Haley and Kurt Kruger of the Portland Bureau of Transportation are in attendance and can answer your questions if you have any. And then lastly, I need to apologize, and just caught it with Carla's presentation or reading of the ordinance. The ordinance should state that the requested change is from the open space zone to the general industrial 2 zone rather than the general industrial 1 zone. So we'll need to amend that language. Our presentation is correct, as well as, of course, the hearings officer recommendation recommends the IG2 zone, but please note that. And then finally, with 4 reviews and a complex proposal, there's a lot of information that needs to be covered today. Please excuse us if we take longer than 10 minutes. We've tried to make our presentation as concise as possible.
Okay.
The Trust for Public Lands is a national nonprofit organization. And
Sheila, if you could just hold up for one second,
of course.
Commissioner
Fish needs to do his
so. Commissioner Fish, just need to do a quick check to see if you have any ex parte contacts to disclose or any conflicts of interest to declare.
Thank you, Mayor. I have no conflicts of interest. I have been party to generic conversations about Colwood dating back to my term as commissioner in charge of Portland Parks and Rec, not so much the sausage making of this, but sort of the general concept, nothing that would rise to a disclosure.
Okay, thank you very much.
And Sheila, you're going to cue me as to when you want me to do those amendments?
Yes, we will. Thank you. The Trust for Public Land, a national nonprofit organization, is the applicant. The applicant is requesting an amendment to the comprehensive plan map and from open space to the industrial sanctuary designation, and is also asking that the zoning be changed from open space to the general industrial 2 zone. These changes are requested for approximately 48 acres of the 138-acre golf course site. The change will affect the northern one-third of the course that is identified as Tax Lot 100. Also proposed is an amendment to the zoning map to remove from Tax Lot 100 23.3 acres of C environmental conservation overlay zoning and 2.72 acres of P environmental protection overlay zoning. And an environmental review is requested to remove existing riparian features and to fill a large pond. The applicant is proposing to retain the open space zone and designation on the remaining, as well as the remaining environmental zoning on approximately 90 acres of the site. Mitigation for impacts to environmental resources and functional values on Tax Lot 100 are proposed primarily on the southern portion of the site within the existing environmental zones. The applicant proposes 3.07 acres of wetland creation and a total of 26.08 acres of riparian enhancement and new forest restoration. The new forest will be planted in a 13-acre area west of Northeast Alderwood between the Columbia and Whitaker Sloughs. The planting scheme is consistent with the Port of Portland's wildlife management plan. Again, most of the site will remain in open space. The area shown in light blue is where the industrial zoning will be applied. And please note that the Coley Park that is shown on the applicant's site plan is a city facility, as you all know, and is not part of the site, nor is it part of this proposal. Approximately 5 years ago, the Colwood owners requested to change 112 of the 138-acre site from open space to the industrial designation and zone. The hearings officer recommended denial, and the city council accepted that recommendation and denied the map change request. New, since the previous land use review, is the adoption and implementation of the Airport Futures Land Use Plan. The plan implements new comprehensive plan policies and amendments to the Portland Zoning Code. Specifically, Chapter 33.565, the Portland International Airport Plan District, was added to the code. This plan district includes additional use allowances for airport-related activities, specific development standards, and environmental regulations that were written for the airport and adjacent properties. Zoning maps were changed to apply additional environmental zoning per an updated resource inventory. And you should note that some of that environmental zoning that was applied to the Colwood site is now proposed for removal. This map shows the current zoning. We see the open space zone, and along the sloughs and wetland areas, the C&P overlay zones have been applied. The C overlay zone is intended to protect resource values while still allowing environmentally sensitive development. The P overlay zone provides the highest level of protection. This map reflects the staff and hearings officer's recommended proposal. The area outlined in blue is proposed to be changed to an industrial zone, and we see that most of the current C&P overlay zoning is removed from the proposed IG2 zone area. The area circled in green is where C&P overlay zoning is being added. This is where wetland mitigation is proposed by the applicant. This aerial photo helps identify the Colwood site and the surrounding development. The Courses Clubhouse is located on Northeast Columbia Boulevard. Northeast Alderwood Road winds north-south through the site, and Northeast Cornfoot Road is the east-west street just north of the slough. North of the golf course is Port of Portland property, including an active airfield and the south runway. To the northwest are military facilities, including the Oregon Air National Guard. To the east and west, there are industrial and employment uses. And then directly south of the site is the Thomas Coley City Park. This photo illustrates the large, wide fairways and mature trees that define the course. Standing on the south side of Whitaker Slough, the camera is pointing south towards the clubhouse. And you should note that all of this area shown in this photo is proposed to be retained as open space. This is the portion of the course that is on the east side of Alderwood where wetland mitigation is proposed to occur. This area, again, will remain designated and zoned open space and will be within environmental overlay zones. Here we see the signalized intersection at Northeast Alderwood Road and Cornfoot Road. These roadways will serve Tax Lot 100. This photo shows part of Tax Lot 100. As we see, the northern section abuts airport-related uses. In the background, we can see the airport's air traffic control tower. And here we see that large man-made pond in Tax Lot 100 that is proposed to be filled. In order to be approved, the requested comprehensive plan map amendment must be found to meet approval criterion 33.810.050A. This criterion requires that the requested change of designation will, on balance, equally or better support applicable adopted policies. The approval criteria for the zoning map amendment 33.855050 must also be met. Criterion A requires that the requested new zone correspond with the comprehensive plan map designation, and Criterion B requires that public services are adequate or can be made capable of supporting the uses allowed in the requested zone. In regards to transportation-related policies, the state's transportation planning rule was recently amended. It now allows for partial mitigation to address impacts if the proposed mitigation provides system-wide benefits. The applicant's traffic impact analysis identified three intersections that will not meet performance standards. The intersections are at Northeast Alderwood and Cornfoot, Northeast Alderwood and 82nd Avenue, and Northeast Killingsworth and the I-205 southbound intersection or southbound ramps. The I-205 southbound ramp improvements have been identified as needed for many, many years. To address the city's Goal 6 transportation policies and the state's transportation planning rule, both the Oregon Department of Transportation and the Portland Bureau of Transportation support the applicant's proposal of adding a third queuing lane on the southbound ramp of Northeast Killingsworth and the I-205 interstate. Staff finds that the ramp improvements will provide system-wide benefits and hence will satisfy the allowance of partial mitigation. This map identifies the Colwood site and the location where those ramp improvements would occur. Now I'm going to turn.
I ask your indulgence to continue the presentation.
Of course, yes.
Thank you.
Please continue. Thank you. Now I'm going to turn the presentation over to Rachel so that she can explain the environmental review aspects. Rachel.
Thank you, Sheila. I will now present the approval criteria for the overlay zone changes and the environmental review. For changes to the environmental overlay zones, the proposal must meet the criteria under Section 33.855.060, Criterion A has different thresholds that apply based upon whether the proposal is to add a designation or remove a designation. In this case, the applicant proposed both. And then Criterion B requires consistency with the purpose and adoption criteria of the regulation. Zoning Code Section 33.565.500 contains the purpose statements specific to environmental zones in the Portland International Airport Plan District, and the adoption criteria is the Middle Columbia Corridor and Airport Economic, Social, Environment, and Energy Analysis, known as the ESEE analysis, that was adopted as part of the Airport Futures Land Use Plan. In addition, the applicable goals and policies of the comprehensive plan and any area plans must be addressed specifically for the changes to the overlay zones. For this project, the changes to the environmental overlay zones are closely tied to the requested environmental review. The proposed resource removal is necessary to meet the objectives of the Port of Portland's Federal Aviation Administration authorized wildlife hazard management plan. Therefore, the approval criteria which apply to the resource removal are those in Section 33.430.250, E3 through E6 only. Unlike other areas of the city, this means the applicant is not required to avoid or minimize impacts to environmental resources. Instead, the applicant may move directly to mitigation. The Portland International Airport is currently ranked the 34th busiest airport in the country, but is ranked in the top 10 for bird strikes. The long-range goal for the Port of Portland is to minimize the risk to aviation safety posed by wildlife species of concerns on and around the airfield. The existing pond, wetland, and mowed turf grass on the Colwood Golf Course result in a situation that attracts birds like red-tailed hawks, great blue heron, and Canada geese. This creates a setting that is hazardous to airport operations. Habitat modification is the most effective long-term remedial measure for reducing wildlife hazards on or near the airfield. The hearings officer found that removal of the wetlands and the surrounding grassy areas, as proposed by the applicant, meets the provisions of PCC 33.565.580, specifically because the types of features are identified in the Wildlife Hazard Management Plan as a risk, the features are in close proximity to an active runway, and it is possible to replace the features and functions through mitigation. This map down in the lower right corner shows some bird strikes that was provided by the port. Here we have a photo that illustrates the site and specifically the pond in context of the Portland International Airport. It's roughly 1,800 feet from the end of the main runway, This color map was prepared by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff and submitted to the hearings officer. The map identifies the applicant's proposed resource and environmental zone removal, as well as mitigation efforts. The gray areas north of Cornfoot Road on Tax Lot 100 are the impact areas. The light blue areas on the northern parcel are restoration and enhancement areas. Then south of Cornfoot Road between the Columbia and Whitaker sloughs, the bright green and deep blue color areas identify the applicant's proposed wetland creation, wetland restoration, and riparian restoration and enhancement areas. The yellow represents existing environmental protection zoning that offers some additional enhancement opportunities in the future. Bureau Planning staff, Bureau of Environmental Services, and Bureau of Development Services staff worked diligently with the applicant on the mitigation plan and all offered their support to the hearings officer. The hearings officer recommends approval of the environmental review to remove resources in accordance with the FAA-authorized Wildlife Hazard Management Plan. Conditions of approval are recommended to ensure the mitigation is completed as proposed. This includes a legal instrument guaranteeing access to the southern parcels for the purpose of carrying out mitigation, which is necessary should the ownership between the north and south parcels be separated. The hearings officer also recommends approval of the zoning map amendment to modify the environmental protection and conservation zones as shown on Exhibit B4 and the proposed zoning map shown at the beginning of this presentation. The proposed zone map recognizes the council-adopted ESEE analysis about where to limit and strictly limit uses in environmentally sensitive areas. A condition of approval is recommended to delay changing the environmental zones on the official zoning map until the resources are removed and the mitigation is complete. This condition acknowledges concerns about what happens should the northern parcel not be redeveloped in the near future. The hearings officer also recommends approval of the comprehensive plan map amendment from open space to industrial sanctuary and concurrent zone map amendment to the IG2 zone for the northern 48.36 acres of the golf course, with conditions that address the environmental review and zoning map amendment to modify the environmental overlay zones. The hearings officer found that the proposal equally supports the weighted comprehensive plan policies that address the environment. This proposal better supports the weighted economic development policies, as well as the newly adopted policies that were implemented through the airport futures planning effort. The proposal does not equally support open space policies. However, on balance, the proposal will be equally or more supportive of the comprehensive plan as a whole than the current designation. Conditions of approval are recommended to address stormwater management requirements for a future outfall and the construction of a third queuing lane on the southbound ramp at Killingsworth and I-205 to address Goal 6 transportation policies, the zoning map amendment adequacy of service criteria, and the transportation planning rule mitigation allowance. Here's your cue, Commissioner Fritz. The hearings officer has submitted a memo to council regarding the particular wording of conditions B and C. Council must formally amend the ordinance to address this issue.
Oh.
Well, this will conclude the main staff presentation. Kurt Kruger of the Portland Bureau of Transportation is here to discuss transportation improvement requirements and an additional requested change to conditions of approval. So you may want to hold off and adopt both requested changes at once.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sheila. Rachel, Mayor Hales, Commissioners, Kurt Kruger with the Portland Bureau of Transportation. I know you heard a lot and you're prepared to probably hear a little bit more, so I'll be brief with my comments. I have an amendment I'll get to in just a minute that we're submitting at the last second, but essentially that I wanted to add to the comments about the collaborative effort on this project. Staff, the applicant, and ODOT and PBOT have worked very collaboratively along with a lot of others on this effort in working with a new transportation planning rule that we hadn't worked with before. In fact, this is the first time this rule has been applied for and when attempted to be used for the first time in the state. So we crafted a new process in the middle of this zone change. Essentially, in the past, standard practice would be for us to identify intersections that are impacted and then ask a developer to fix or mitigate those. The interesting thing here is there's a lot of traffic that flows through this area, and so the development impact from this project is very small into a number of little intersections. So in past practice, we would typically ask a developer for little pieces of money to be put in a pot for a future project. Unfortunately, that wouldn't necessarily build anything tomorrow. The new transportation planning rule allowed us to put our heads together with ODOT and the applicant and determine where is a project of the magnitude that we could ask this developer to construct, and where can we construct that tomorrow? And that is why we're looking at an improvement approximately a mile and a half away on the I-205 southbound on-ramp from Killingsworth. This is a project that's estimated at about $1.1 million. This summer, the Oregon Transportation Commission awarded the city a grant of about $250,000 to be used for this project as well. So there's a lot of players in this effort to get to this point, and we think this is a much-needed improvement in the area. What you have before you and what I've just presented is an amendment. Earlier in the process, there was a number of public works appeals that were applied for and processed. One of those was regarding transportation improvements at a later time along Columbia Boulevard. There is a design effort underway in PBOT right now to look at how we can improve the connections of Alderwood, Columbia, and Coley in Columbia. We don't know what that design is at this point, but that may need some amount of right-of-way along the southern property line of the Colwood Golf Course site right now. So what this amendment is doing is placing an easement of approximately 20 feet in width along that section of Columbia in case we need that. And so in case it is needed, the condition is written so that that easement would be then conveyed as right-of-way, and that area that we would not need would give back, we would quit claim that back as real property. The reason for the easement is we didn't want to have them dedicate and then have to come back and vacate right away that we had already dedicated. So this has been discussed. This is the last minute. It came up this morning. I've talked to all parties. They've seen this language, and they are all accepting of this language.
Thank you. So let me summarize and see if I understand this new transportation planning rule correctly. And that is that usually in land use cases, we would have a reasonable nexus and a rough proportionality very close to the site for off-site improvements. Because of the new transportation planning rule, we are allowed to do it a mile and a half away. Is that part correct?
That's correct.
And Columbia Boulevard is a state highway. Is that correct? Could we do this according to the transportation planning rule if it wasn't? Does it apply to all roads?
Yes.
It's not just because it's a state highway, but that was why ODOT was involved, is because of both 205 and Columbia Boulevard being state facilities.
That's correct, Commissioner. The great thing about this new rule is it provided ODOT flexibility to work with the local agency on identifying mutually agreeable projects. So if we found a project that was solely within the city and there was much more benefit from the city's perspective.
Lift the mic up a bit, please.
Sorry. This provides us the allowance to identify and agree on a project. And in this case, we and ODOT agreed that this was the best impact.
Does there still have to be any kind of reasonable nexus between the project and the planned use of the money, or no?
Absolutely. We still need to pass the legal tests of the nexus and the rough proportionality.
So this is roughly proportional to the impact, even though it's a little further away. Okay. Does anybody else have any questions on that?
I have a question, Commissioner Fritz. Kurt said that the amendment on PBOT stationary had been reviewed and discussed by all the parties. Is that likewise the case with the other amendment we have?
Yes, so maybe we should move to that. The other amendments that we have, which is just on the plain piece of paper, is from the hearings officer, Gregory Frank. These were discussed during the process before him, inadvertently left out of the conditions, so he sent us a letter set to add these amendments. So everybody was aware of them. It just was inadvertently left out of the record for our meet.
So I think you can put both sets of amendments on the table with one motion.
Can we?
So I'm not sure which of mine is working. Sorry, Carla. If I might run through this, if you don't mind, I would like to run through it because I've heard also another set of amendments from staff to correct an error in the ordinance. So
okay.
Let me, and I'm going to assume right now that you're going to move both the PBOT and the BDS amendments. And so this is what it would look like. So using BDSs as a base, you would do, their first one is to amend Directive A as follows. You would leave it the same, except that you would add language saying, except as conditions B and C are modified by, and condition A is added to this ordinance. Condition K is going to be the PBOT ordinance, or the condition, excuse me. You would add a number 3 to it that would say, add condition K from the attached, which is the PBOT document. And staff and I will, if this is what you decide to do, we'll write this up for Carla so she knows what we're doing. And then the fourth is amend finding 2B and directive B2 to substitute the words general industrial 2 for general industrial 1. And those are the only two instances I found, Sheila, where those existed. Is that correct? Okay. So those
and in the title of the ordinance.
And it wasn't in the title of the ordinance. It's in the title of the report from the hearings officer. So Carla, I think, can do that. I don't see that in the title of the ordinance itself.
I'm going to second that in a second. But
I think I've just moved it, right. I just moved what she said.
I'll second it. And just want to be clear, though, that all the amendments before us have been reviewed by the parties.
Correct. And I'm sure that some people will let us know if they haven't.
Yeah, people have a chance to testify.
If they haven't, or if they have a strong view, they'll have a chance to testify on it. But
correct.
At this point.
This much is on the table for discussion.
Okay. Further discussion or questions for staff before we vote on putting the amendments on the table and having the amended findings part of the record in front of us? If not, then roll call to adopt the amendments and have them before us.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, so we're taking up the rest of the hearing on the proposal as amended, just as been described. Thank you. So that's it for staff presentation. I think it's now time for the applicant's presentation. Please come up.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Mayor Hales, Commissioners Novick, Fritz, and Fish. My name is Don Goldberg. I'm a senior project manager with the Trust for Public Land here in our Oregon office, which is located at 808 Southwest 3rd Avenue in the city of Portland. I'm really delighted to be here today because this should be actually a day of celebration, a day in which a broad coalition of missions and opinions have come together to accomplish a wonderful opportunity to move the Colwood project forward in a balanced approach. I'm aware that there is a tremendous amount of passion involved on this Colwood project, but as Commissioner Fritz had mentioned, it's important for us to focus on why we are here today, which is a land use application for the rezoning of the rear 48 acres of the golf course. The Trust for Public Land is a 501c3 not-for-profit corporation whose mission is to conserve land for people to enjoy as parks, trails, and natural areas. Our three primary focus areas are parks for people, working lands, and land and water. I want to thank the staff. This has been a long, very complex multi-agency project. I appreciate all of staff's time and effort to facilitate this process, and as you can tell, they did a wonderful job today of presenting the outcome. It was not always easy, and surely there were times of disagreement and stress during this process, but we stayed focused on the big picture and worked through our differences with a common goal of serving our community. So why the Trust for Public Land, and why are we the applicant? And what was our approach? The Trust for Public Land, as I stated, is a 501c3. We are celebrating this year our 40th anniversary as a national nonprofit. We've completed over 4,250 parks and conservation projects nationwide. Some of the notable local projects were the protection of over 17,000 acres in the Columbia Gorge, Chehalem Ridge Natural Area in Washington County, the Riverview Natural Area here in Portland, the expansion of the Willamette National Cemetery and protecting its resources, and Holly Farms, to just name a few. The Trust for Public Land typically gets involved with complex land use transactions with an outcome that fits within one or more of those previous three stated focus areas. Our intention is to move the property into public ownership. In general, we support public access on the resources that we're involved in. We are not a broker, but a principal. The Cully neighborhood has been identified as a park-deficient area of the city of Portland. It is the most ethnically diverse area in the state of Oregon and one of the lowest income areas here in the city. The Trust for Public Land has identified a real need for a regional park in the Cully neighborhood to address these deficiencies as well as health and welfare of the community. So in order to facilitate a fair and equitable process among the stakeholders, i.e. the neighborhood groups, environmental groups, business groups, the Port of Portland, the City of Portland, the county, state, and number of federal agencies, the Trust for Public Land involvement was to accommodate as many needs and desires as possible, keeping, of course, in mind our mission. I call this a balanced approach. The balanced approach was based upon the previous hearings, your decision as a council on the previous application, all public records and comments from many stakeholders, the land, and of course the individual parcel, not as a policy or a template, but analyzing this property for its individual functions, neighbors, other uses, environment, proximity to the airport, attributes and deficiencies, and the desire and the need for a regional park, as well as providing much needed potential jobs for the city. So how did we progress on our application? From the onset, the Trust for Public Land and its consultants were committed to working with all levels of staff within all the agencies. Unlike a typical applicant, we met regularly with pertinent agencies and staff to design a project that facilitated support and would accommodate the complexities of a project like this. This is in contrast to the previous application on the same property. Our desire was for community support as well as all agencies involved. We worked through the process to come up with a conclusion best suited for the land and community versus forcing the process to accommodate the desired outcome. The Trust for Public Land's intention is to set very high standards for the environmental mitigation of the property. We have, as the staff has pointed out, We are creating extensive wetlands. We are adding approximately 26 acres of forest, either new forest or restoration of existing forest. I can't help but picture 10 or 15 years from now, a 25-acre forest in northeast Portland where children have no opportunity to go in that type of environment. We've committed the project to address the completion of Cornfoot in front of the property, which includes widening of the street, adding a bike lane and sidewalk. The property will be responsible, as noted by staff, for the expansion of the 205 ramp on Killingsworth to address traffic issues. We believe jobs will be created, safety concerns of the Port of Portland will be addressed, extensive mitigation work, both environmentally and in traffic, will occur. And of course, the Trust for Public Land will be able to move forward in the acquisition of the future park to serve the entire community of Portland, in particular the Cully neighborhood and all of its wonderful diversity. The Trust for Public Land looks forward to your favorable decision on this land use application and in the future delivering a regional park to the city of Portland.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Cerbone. I'm a land use planner with Cardno here in Portland. Just wanted to start off by saying we're in full agreement with the staff report and the conditions of approval proposed by PBOT. We would like to just review the conditions as revised through the hearings officer recommendation while you're hearing the rest of your testimony. I worked very closely with John Van Scavern, Mark Butorek, and Don Goldberg to prepare the applications for you today. The effort was distinct from a typical entitlement project that I'd normally be involved with, in that the focus as directed by TPL was to find solutions that met all the needs of all the stakeholders of the project. We were directed to address the mitigation not just for the property, but also to work towards solutions that benefit the natural environment and economy. These outcomes could not have been possible without the cooperation of the community, which included city staff, the residents, nonprofit organizations, as well as the state and federal government agencies. I'm proud to say I've been part of this project before you that has found the right balance, as noted by Don. We're providing the opportunity for as many as 850 to 1,000 new jobs in the community by addressing the needs of additional large lot industrial land identified by both the city and Metro. The proposed improvements to Cornfoot and Alderwood will benefit the local transportation system when the site is developed, and the improvements to the I-205 southbound on-ramp will not only benefit the site, but the Columbia Industrial Corridor and the entire community. Last but not least, the improvements to the Columbia and Whitaker sloughs through the restoration enhancement of habitat will benefit the community and natural system for years to come. And John from Pacific Habitat Services provide a little more detail on this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is John Van Staveren. I'm a professional wetland scientist with Pacific Habitat Services. The proposed restoration plan grew out of our investigation into the site's natural resources, including its hydrology, soils, and vegetation. And from this knowledge, we were able to craft a plan that will more than compensate for the proposed impacts. It was also greatly shaped by our extensive interaction with the city's bureaus, the Port of Portland, and on-site meetings with the Department of State Lands, Corps of Engineers, and Department of Fish and Wildlife. As you have heard, the proposed removal of 1.62 acres of wetland to the south of the airport will be mitigated by the creation of 3.07 acres of wetlands to the south of Whitaker Slough. The wetland will grow into a dense thicket of scrub shrub vegetation that will not attract flocking birds such as Canada geese that could pose a threat to the nearby airport. The wetland will also not have standing water for a significant period of the year, but is designed to attract native turtles. The proposed impacts to over 26 acres of environmental overlay zones, which primarily consists of the existing fairways of the golf course, will be mitigated through the restoration or new plantings of forested habitat between the Columbia and Whitaker sloughs and the enhancement of existing forested habitat through the control of non-native species and the planting of native species. So the restoration and enhancement of the forested habitat will bring the Colwood Golf Course back to a state it was historically. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for the applicant team here? All right. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Now we will turn to those who've signed up to testify in support of the application.
We have 26 people in support signed up. The first three, please come on up, are Terry Parker, Laura Campos Gleason, and Steve Wells. And they'll be followed by Erwin Bergman, Howard Kenyon, and Mark Butorek.
You each have 3 minutes. Just give us your name. If you haven't done this before, give us your name and make your statement. And then, obviously, with this many people signed up, as we proceed, if you hear that your points have already been covered, you're free to let us know that and either not come forward or just come forward more briefly. So, Terry, you're first.
Thank you. My name is Terry Parker. I live in Northeast Portland. I'm here today because I support the majority of Colwood as open space. But in balance, I also think a southern section of the property needs to be retained for the healthy sport of golf. One option might be a short, family-friendly pitch and putt, similar to the one that previously occupied the grounds near the zoo where the forestry center is now located. One of my concerns is that completely closing Colwood to golf long-term could lead to golf deficiency and will create undue pressure on and have impact user impacts on other nearby golf courses such as Rose City. Even though pro golf is nationally televised, I'm sure you've heard the argument that even with population growth, golfing is in decline. Maybe that is due to social media, where the younger generations are more interested in exercising their fingers and thumbs on electronic devices, or maybe it is because there is no current superhero or idol of golf. Or more likely, it is because, unlike bicycling, golf, for the most part, is financially self-sustainable and thereby expensive. It is my understanding that, unlike most park facilities, the pay-to-play green fees covers the majority of the maintenance and operation costs on the city's public golf courses. And that brings up a real equity issue. One of the excuses for not assessing bicyclists' paid user fees or license fees to pay for bicyclists is bicyclists healthy. Maybe golf, along with the city's swimming pools and tennis courts, should also be subsidized and free of charge. Golfing, swimming, and tennis are all healthy activities. Earlier today, you passed a resolution promoting Great Gateway Green. Are any of the proposed mountain bike trails going to require user-paid green permit fees to pay for continued maintenance? Equity requires that bicyclists pay for specialized infrastructure they want to utilize, be it in a park or on the streets. Back to Colwood, and in closing, golf needs to be a part of the long-range master plan for the Colwood property, be it a short, family-friendly, low-cost, nine-hole pitch and putt course, or possibly just a managed driving range and some putting greens. Some form of golf on a portion of the property needs to be retained long-term. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. You always give me something new to think about, and I appreciate that. Are you a golfer?
I used to be. I get out occasionally, maybe once or twice a year now when the neighborhood has a tournament or something. But I used to play with my dad when he was alive, and he was very avid. So
I'm kind of
speaking for him in that sense, too.
I like that. Thank you.
Okay. Good afternoon.
Hi, my name is Laura Campos. Some of you are familiar with me. I've been coming here since the 70s, and I worked for Neil Goldschmidt right out of college and Ernie Bonner at the Planning Bureau. So open space is certainly something we have to consider carefully before we release it. And I've been involved with the Cully neighborhood, although I currently sit on the board of South Portland, which is Willamette River. But the Columbia is very important to our native community, and I'm an elder in the native community. So I am in support of this zone change to IG2. I'm excited that the southern 90 acres will be retained, unlike their proposal that was given 5 years ago. I think this is a marked improvement. I'm really struggled with this because I think environmental concerns are very important, and as a native person, especially, you know, habitat for animals. But there is also a very big need for economic development in this area in terms of jobs for the local community. Now, I know that in the South Waterfront, in some way, I feel that the promise of jobs wasn't really totally met, and I'm hoping that when this zone change is given and jobs are really created, they mentioned 850 to 1,000. I think an educational component has to be in there to allow the local community to develop the skills to take advantage of these jobs, because it's a significant sacrifice to give up this open space. And if there are a commitment for jobs, let's make this a real commitment. The other thing I wanted to talk about was I'm also a member of the Portland Youth and Elders Council, and we've had many discussions about this there, the Cully Park Community Involvement Committee. I also sit on the Cully Park Health Monitoring Committee. They have developed a really interesting model at Cully, and I would like to see that model Let Us Build Cully Park for design and construction also extended to the Colwood area. So that's pretty much concludes my comments.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Laura. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mayor Hales and City Commissioners. My name is Steve Wells. I'm with Trammell Crow Company. Our office is at 1300 Southwest 5th, Suite 3050 in Portland. I want to, our company is an industrial developer. We've developed industrial projects all over the city and also have developed mixed-use process projects at the airport in our development of Cascade Station. So we're very familiar with this area and energized by the area and all its different uses. I'd like to, I'm speaking in support of the proposal with the amendments. I'd like to particularly commend TPL and the city staff, the landowner, and all that have supported them in bringing up a much reduced industrial proposal to the area, and one that I think finds the right balance for Portland of what this project can be and lets us get to the developable benefits of the site while preserving the open space. We've watched it from the background and truly amazed at the efforts that have gone from all those parties and the cooperation to try to make it a viable development opportunity. I think the benefits of the project are many to the city and the region. It does preserve 90 acres of open space for the Cully neighborhood and for the broader area. I think the transportation system and the application of the new TPR rule, I think, it's a good example of how to take money and not spread it and actually do something that is useful for the whole region. It resolves some of the wildlife hazards associated with the north part of the parcel. But from our standpoint as an industrial developer, I think there's been a lot of talk recently about the industrial land shortages. And it's not just talk. It's real. It's very difficult to find large industrial parcels that are so important to our overall economy. And believe it or not, this 50 acres it has less issues than some that are out there to try to bring other parcels to the property. There are very few 48 or 50-acre parcels. I think the economic development benefits in terms of jobs, both construction and permanent jobs that would come from it, and potentially new users that we could bring to the economy are very important. And we just ask that you support the proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
The next three are Erwin Bergman, Howard Kenyon, and Mark Butorak. And they'll be followed by Demi Espinoza, Alan Hippolito, and Victor Merced.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hale, Commissioners. My name is Erwin Bergman. I have lived 43 years in the Cully neighborhood at 5330 Northeast Holman. I am responsible for resolving quality of life issues for the Cully Associate of Neighbors, CAN. I'm here to testify in support of the rezoning of the northern 48-acre parcel of the Colwood Golf Course to an industrial IG2 zone, with the remaining 90-acre southern parcel remaining open space, ultimately to become a city park. My testimony reflects the August 21 findings and recommendation of Gregory Frank, the hearing officer, in his 140-page report. I and others from Cully had testified at that hearing. At the September monthly CAN meeting, I summarized rezoning details, and CAN members present, approximately 40, unanimously voted to support rezoning. Obviously, I and other CAN members would have preferred to have the entire golf course property remain open space to become a park. The overriding concern, however, is be an if and when. As you may remember, CAN efforts to get a Colwood Park go back clear to 2007. It appears now to become a reality, and soon. Surrounded by 5,700 acres, 9 square miles, of industrial sanctuary, a 90-acre true sanctuary for people and animals should acknowledge to some degree that people, neighbors, have a need and greatly benefit from getting away from it all for at least a few hours and enjoy the few remaining vestiges of nature, such as the Columbia Slough and Vines. Last but not least, I would like to express my deep gratitude to the Trust for Public Land, and especially to Mr. Don Goldberg, to grab the opportunity to work out a deal with Colwood owners and to now be in the position to deliver an exquisite piece of Portland history to become a jewel in our neighborhood and for all of Portland. Thank you. And finally, after you hopefully approve the rezoning plans, in time management, eventual ownership of Colwood will transition from TPL to the contract owner now to the Bureau of Parks. During such time, TPL goals, their care and efforts must not be abandoned or diluted. With Colwood being identified as a special habitat area, an important wildlife connectivity corridor, and also an important element of the Portland trade system, a high and diverse level of planning expertise is essential under the guidance of TPL as a new owner and the Bureau of Parks as a future owner and caretaker. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Good afternoon.
Hi. My name is Howard Kenyon, and I am the Senior Program Manager at the Northeast Emergency Food Program and Emergency Food and Services Program of Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, located in Cully. I express my support for the zoning change, believing it to be of great benefit, particularly for Cully, but also for Portland. When values conflict, it is incumbent to find the best compromise, and values generally do conflict. I say that as an ethics professor. It has nothing to do with this session here, but that's always the case. In this case, the balance between environment and economic development is a healthy one in this plan, I firmly believe. I do have strong concerns about the displacement of low-income residents of Cully. Because of this, I am working to connect low-income people in Cully to economic opportunities through the Cully Boulevard Alliance, the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative of the PDC, of which I serve as chair. I speak not on behalf of CBA today, simply as a member in good standing in that on that steering committee. The zoning change moves us in this direction of balancing the environment with the economic. As long as we are conscientious of all contingencies and their effect on current residents, and I do appreciate the work of the city and of national organizations, my concern is that we always keep in mind what the people of Cully themselves have to say. And I do say that I see Verde's model of creating broad benefits environmental assets is a good model to follow in Cully, but not just Verde, but I think that as we work together, we want to make sure that the jobs in this development really benefit the people of Cully. It's something that Portland has really made clear that they want to communicate, is that when we improve an area, it really benefits the people of that area and not others who will move in to take their place. And so I urge us all to keep that in mind as we make this development, that it's not just outsiders that benefit, but it's also those who live there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay.
The next three are Demi Espinosa, Alan Hippolito, and Victor Merced. And they'll be followed by Ray Espana, Rich Gunderson, and Don Tarbutton.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you, City Council members. My name is Demi Espinosa. I'm the coordinator with the Coalition of Communities of Color. And I'm here today on behalf of the Coalition, formed in 2001. The CCC is an alliance of culture-specific organizations in the Portland metro area, and we represent African, African-American, Asian, Pacific Islander, Latino, Native, American, and Slavic. I'm here today. We appreciate the Trust for Public Lands decision and hard work to bring the zoning change forward. And we're in support of the zoning change, and we ask a commitment from the City of Portland Park and Rec Bureau to adapt the Let's Build Cully Park model to COLD by working with One Parque, One Modelo Coalition. The Coalition of Communities of Color is a signatory to the Colwood Letter, and we support the One Park, One Modelo Coalition's effort to adapt a community-based approach to building a neighborhood park by and for low-income people and people of color. The model produces outputs that are all in line with the CCC's community and economic development strategic plan goals, which include workforce diversification,